Okay, why don't we move on to item number four on our agenda, the conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for irrigated agriculture. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is item number four, and we'll start with,
And for clarification, I'm going to recuse myself from participating in the discussion pertaining to item four, the ag waiver, because I'm myself an agriculture discharger. However, I will stay here in the room, front row, and listen to all the upcoming comments. But I just wanted to clarify this with all of you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Wolf.
Through the chair, is this the appropriate time for ex parte contacts?
It will be, I think, once I get through. I've got an opening statement, and then we'll go ahead and see if there are any.
Great, thank you.
Is this the time for the opening statement?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. This is the time and place for a public hearing to consider adoption of a waiver of waste discharge requirements for discharges of waste from irrigated lands, a monitoring and reporting program, and certification of a subsequent environmental impact report. This hearing is being held before the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. I am Jeff Young, Chair of the Regional Board. I am joined by Vice Chair Russell Jeffries, Monica Hunter, Mike Jordan, Mike Johnston, and Bruce Delgado. For your information, as you just heard, Bruce, board member Dr. Jean-Pierre Wolf has a conflict and may not participate in this matter as a board member in accordance with state law. The official record of the testimony at this hearing will be created by our court reporter. We are also using a tape recorder and videotape recording today, but the recordings will not be the official record of the hearing. At the end of the hearing today, I will close the record in this matter, and this board will deliberate and arrive at a decision. The board may adopt, reject, or modify the proposed order. The board will accept oral comments today. As you can see, there is a great deal of interest in this matter. In order to allow for an orderly and fair process and to allow time for board deliberation, I will limit the time for speakers. I have allowed extra time to those persons who have requested extra time in advance as set forth in the public notice for this item. The rest of the public will have up to 3 minutes, but it may be less depending on the number of speakers. If you wish to speak, please submit a speaker card now. They are available at the back of the room, and I will accept speaker cards until noon. Following the lunch break, which we will try to limit to 1 hour, I will announce the amount of time I will be able to allocate for public speakers. Please summarize your comments and avoid repetition. The board members have fully reviewed the record and will consider all comments. The board has three recently appointed board members. The new board members have become thoroughly familiar with the record and are prepared to consider the record and your comments today and deliberate on this matter. Would any of you, of my colleagues, like to add anything at this point?
Mr. Chair, I'll go first.
I'll go first
if you want. I know there's some concern that I wasn't present at the February meeting and workshops, and I want to make sure to let both the board members and the public know that I have listened to the audio of that meeting at least twice, some sections more than that. And going back to actually in the fall when I was appointed, it was made clear to me both in the pre-appointment and post-appointment process with the governor's office that I was to keep a clear and open mind on this matter. They knew it was coming up right away. They knew that the appointments of the three people would immediately lead to a quorum, and it would bring the item up immediately. So I'd just like to reassure both the public and my board members that I have reviewed both the meeting in February, the past 3 years' worth of documents, both audio and written, and do have an open mind. Thanks.
Good. Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah. I would like to disclose that because I have the duty of being mayor in the city, where I live, I have a lot of interactions with public and elected officials, and on numerous occasions, people have made very cursory comments to me regarding this issue, and in some cases, they've made negative comments about the process or this board, and in some cases, they've just said things like, boy, it sounds like a really tough issue, wouldn't want to be in your shoes, how's it going, that kind of thing, but with none of those have I ever discussed the particulars of the ag order. And so although it's a very complicated and difficult issue, I remain fully impartial and unbiased, and so I just want to disclose that.
Thank you, Mr. Delgado. Anyone else have anything else to add at this point? Okay. The hearing will proceed as follows. Regional Board staff will give their presentation first, and they will be followed by the following groups that have requested extra time: the Ag Working Group and Farmers for Water Quality have 60 minutes of time, 1 hour. Dr. Barbeau has 5 minutes, or he can be pulled into the Ag Working Group 60 minutes if he needs more time. That's up to them. Dr. Los Huertos has 10 minutes. Ross Clark, Central Coast Wetlands Group, has 8 minutes. Ms. Clary, Clean Water Action, has 24 minutes. The Otter Project and Coast Keepers have 24 minutes. And then we'll have public comments, 3 minutes or less if needed, to accommodate everybody. Closing statement, rebuttal, a Farm Bureau, they may use some of their 60 minutes remaining time for a closing statement after other commenters have made their statements. So that means after the conclusion of all of the 3 minute or less individual speakers, Farm Bureau can allocate some additional time if they choose as a final rebuttal or concluding comments. That's up to them. After the conclusion of testimony and comments, staff will be provided an opportunity to summarize and make a recommendation. A timer will be used. To allow for the orderly conduct of the hearing, I request that you end your comments when your time is complete. When the timer buzzes and the red light comes on, I will allow you to complete your sentence and then move on to the next speaker. We appreciate your cooperation. And folks, I know I have been pretty lenient historically with the buzzer, and typically even when the red light goes off and the 3 minutes are up, I tend to allow people extra time. Today I'm just going to ask you to please finish your sentence. When I see the red light, finish your sentence. Let's conclude so we can move on to the next speaker. Board members, the executive officer and council may ask questions at any time. I request that the board members hold questions until the end of presentations to limit repetition and provide for an orderly process. And to my colleagues, this is going to be a little bit different. This board meeting, as I've conducted it in the past, so that we can get through everything in a more orderly, timely way, I'll do my best not to ask questions when we've got any speakers, and so that we can all listen to what someone has to say. We'll take notes, and then we can all ask questions at the conclusion of that speaker. I think that'll help us. Okay. To make this easier, we have asked for outlines and slide printouts so that you can see from the outline that a potential question may be answered in an upcoming section. And you can easily jot down remaining questions next to the slide in the printout to make it easier to remind yourself later of the question and what part of the presentation prompted the question. We will begin with staff's presentation. Mr. Briggs.
Thanks. Actually, before we start with the presentation, I think Tess Dunham has something she wants to say.
Okay.
And I would just want to say that I think
Speak up.
That these microphones are live all the time. Is there a way to turn them off? Does anybody know?
No.
Okay. So since they're live, then board members, in order to have the recording be accurate, we'll need to not make noises during, you know, during the presentation.
You know what, Tess, before you start, I need a pad.
Okay, we got an extra one of these.
Guys.
There's some right here.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. For the record, Tess Dunham with SOMAC Simmons & Dunn here representing group. Want to make. First, we appreciate the review of the Los Hertos report to make a determination whether it should be in the record. Unfortunately, we do disagree with the chairman's ruling with respect to not allowing it in. But going forward, there are some references within the staff report and some new materials that were just released yesterday that we do believe is prejudicial with respect to the agricultural community and having it in the record, and that it is information that came in after the close of the written comment period. Specifically, in the staff report on page 8, there is a reference to the September 2011 presentation by Dr. Harder that was made before this board that was not made in conjunction with a hearing or workshop on this ag waiver, and therefore we think it is improperly referenced within the staff report. There is a reference to an October 2011 State Water Board report, also within the staff report. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact page number, that we think is an improper reference. Again, that is reference that's material that has come about after the close of the written comment period. There is a reference in materials that were released yesterday that was circulated to a presentation by the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory that was made in September of 2011 as well, which again was made not in conjunction with the workshop or the hearing, and therefore was also made after the close of the written comment period. And also there are excerpts from the 2004 administrative record, which would be improperly included in this record. The 2004 record stands alone as its own. This record begins with the adoption of the 2004 order, may include the 2004 order, but the 2004 record itself is not a part of this administrative record. So those are the objections we would like to place with respect to information that is referenced, and we believe that information, by allowing it in, would be prejudicial to agriculture, as we have not been given the opportunity to provide written comment with respect to that information. Thank you.
Okay, so you gave us page 8. I got that down.
Yes.
And the reference to the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory is on what page?
That is in the question and answer document that was released yesterday. And the October 2011 State Water Board report, I don't have the exact page number here, but it's in the staff report as well.
Okay. Can you share with us how you feel the referencing of this material prejudices your clients?
Well, you are referencing information, scientific information, with respect to the Harder report and Lawrence Livermore, and using it at what it appears to me as justification for certain findings or for information with respect to the order. Because that information was not presented in context of this hearing, nor were we given the opportunity to review that information and provide written comments, that it would be prejudicial for inclusion in reference to that information at this point in time. Any information that the board is relying upon with respect to evidence and technical information should have been available for us to provide written comment prior to the close of the written comment period.
Okay. Ms. McChesney, any comments?
On the issue of the references to those documents, I agree that they are not part of the record. The written record closed whenever it closed in last summer.
August something, right. August 1st or 2nd.
So any documents that were referenced are not part of the record. And so I agree with that comment. As far as the record of the 2004 order, I don't think it's quite as clean cut, but at least the order itself, the 2004 order, is part of the record. But there are some for example, the CEQA document refers to the negative declaration that was prepared for the 2004 order, and that is part of the record for this item because the CEQA document is before the board today is a subsequent environmental impact report that supports the negative declaration that was issued, that was approved in 2004. So that aspect of the record, and I have to reconsider more whether there's any other aspects of the 2004 record that should be part of this record, but at least those two things are definitely part of the record. So,
yeah, but I think what was referenced yesterday or circulated yesterday were excerpts unrelated to either of those.
Correct, and I just am not sure that I totally agree with your objection as far as the past, the previous record, but I'll give it some thought and we can get back to that later.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Chair?
Yes.
I just want to caution the board members to speak into your microphone. It's a little bit hard to hear when you were talking.
Okay. When I was talking or Francis?
When you were talking.
Okay, why don't we move forward with staff's presentation? Mr. Briggs.
We'll do that as soon as I cover a couple more logistics items.
Okay.
Let's see. We have Spanish interpreters, translation assistants in the back of the room. There are headsets available at the front table. Are they over here? And our interpreters are Alejandro Franco and Patricia Hyatt, and they're back there in the back corner. We also have Hector Hernandez of our staff, who is available for assistance with Spanish, English, if that's needed. We have a court reporter, and I'm sorry, I don't have her name right now, but we will, maybe Michael can get that at some point, and then after the break, we will provide the information on the court reporter in case you need to contact the court reporter. And I'd ask our court reporter that if you're getting overwhelmed at any point, either ask us to slow down or to take a break, whatever you need. We appreciate your being here. And Elaine Saul is going to be helping out with recording notes as well. Okay.
Mr. Johnson has a...
Perhaps we should announce in Spanish the availability of Spanish translation because it doesn't do much to announce it in English.
Okay.
They need... You need to come
si quieren traducción al español, hay una persona, hay unas personas allá atrás en el cuarto que les puede dar traducción.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And one other logistics item, we just have a few people who are standing. Maybe that's because you want to, but there are plenty of seats available. I see plenty of empty seats right here in the first five rows. So... feel free to take a seat if you'd like to. Okay, do I have the clicker? So our recommendation today is regarding the updated conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for discharges from irrigated lands. And the action before the board is to consider voting on adoption of this updated order, and there's the number there. And there's a part of a quote from our mission statement for the water boards, ensure the highest reasonable quality for the waters of the state. Good thing to keep in mind. So as an overview, after my introduction, we'll talk about the process that has gone into this order. Pretty brief summary of the water quality conditions. We've gone over these things many times in the last 3.5 years. A summary of the draft order itself. We'll have a bit more discussion on implementation and enforcement, followed by our conclusion. Then will be the opportunity for public comment, and our chair has kind of outlined how that'll work. And then after that public comment, a staff recommendation. So again, we've talked about the severity of the problems that we have, unfortunately, in the Central Coast. I've listed these in a little bit different way from in the past, in that I've put these things in pretty much priority order, with the top priority at the top. That is, nitrate and groundwater, this is a public health problem, and so consequently we say that's a higher priority, the highest priority. And then toxicity, nitrate, and nitrate in surface water, and sediments on down the list. Now, to provide a little perspective on these things and the board's involvement, I'll start at the bottom with what I say is the lowest priority issue, although it's still very important, as demonstrated by the fact that the board has in the recent past taken some pretty serious enforcement actions for sediment problems, just sediment problems in some pretty small areas. For example, some against Caltrans for some construction projects, for some ag property owners for grubbing, for construction sites, and sometimes these have been at the tune of $100,000 or multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars. That shows you how serious the board has taken the problem of sediment for some small isolated areas for nutrients in surface water. Similarly, the board has required municipalities to spend tens of millions of dollars for upgrading their discharge to meet nutrient requirements for discharge to surface water, especially nitrate and nitrogen. For toxicity, similarly, the board has had requirements that have prompted municipalities to eliminate toxicity from their discharges, for example, ammonia from wastewater treatment plants, to the tune of tens of millions of dollars. So, and these are in pretty small areas, short segments of streams. So it demonstrates the severity of the way the board has treated these problems as being serious, even though they're in fairly small areas. And then, of course, as far as drinking water, the board has taken action with regard to perchlorate, which has a lot of similarities to nitrate in terms of the way it acts, and it has a maximum contaminant level, the way it travels in the groundwater basin. When we discovered plumes in the north part of the region from a few sites, the board took very swift and stringent action to require replacement water with immediate enforcement, with time schedules for remediation, that is pulling that water out of the groundwater and remediating it, cleaning it up, at costs of tens of millions of dollars per case. So we've had these, and we've had other threatened well examples where from leak sites, relatively small plumes, less than sometimes a tenth of an acre as far as the plume, and yet we have had communities literally come to our board meeting like today, but going ballistic about what's the board going to do about our wells that are threatened. And these were cases where the wells were not even tainted by the constituents. They definitely weren't contaminated, and yet the board took swift and stringent enforcement actions on those small cases. So how does that compare with what we have before us today? You've seen this, at least the board has seen this slide several times, where we have these depicted here, different sources that we deal with, timber, for example, where is actually mostly related to sediment problems, urban stormwater, which can have multiple problems, and our relative degree of regulation, with really historically the most regulation for point sources and drinking water pollution cases, again, like I said, the highest priority because of the public health threat and landfills in here. But here is where we are depicting the degree of regulation for the existing, that is the 2004 conditional waiver. Now, as far as relative degree of water quality impacts, timber, we think, is down here. Landfills down here. Municipal wastewater, a little more of a threat. Urban stormwater. And again, high priority drinking water pollution cases. And we see irrigated agricultural related problems as being at the far end of the scale because it has all those problems that are severe. And not just in isolated areas, they are widespread through numerous areas in our region. So, for example, with drinking water pollution cases, we're not talking about plumes that are a tenth of an acre or less than an acre. We're talking about hundreds of square miles that exceed the maximum contaminant level. that's why this is such a huge issue and of such huge importance, and why it's necessary for us to be acting to do something about it, to change this mismatch from what we have now compared to the threat. So here's what we're proposing with the 2012 draft order, where we still have a low degree of regulation for the Tier 1, which Angela Schroeder will be talking about in a minute, a greater degree for Tier 2 and Tier 3, and these are degree of threat as we've depicted them. So again, here are those lists of problems. What are we proposing to do about it? Without getting specific, it's basically the order includes that we are calling for implementation practices. That doesn't mean that we're specifying the practices, just the practices that growers typically tell us is what they are trying to do anyway, to accomplish groundwater protection, to accomplish discharge control, and really the most important thing boils down to irrigation and nutrient management, and there are various ways to do that. We're not specifying how. And then, coupled with that, so that we know that we are making progress, monitoring reporting to effectively indicate that we have loading reductions and water quality improvement. So now we're going to move on to the process to renew the agricultural order, and Lisa McCann, who is our section manager, is going to be discussing that section. Lisa McCann.
Thank you, Roger. Board members, you might recall I used this timeline at the February workshop to illustrate the process to renew the agricultural order. And I'm going to use it again just to review and to point out once again that this is one of the most extensive public input processes that you, this board, have used for any decision that you've ever made. We have been at this process to renew the agricultural order for about 3.5, almost 4 years now. We started in July 2008, and we're here today in March 2012 with our 7th board workshop or hearing. Each of the blue stars on this timeline represents a board workshop or hearing, and at each of those, you allowed multiple hours of opportunity for members of the public to address you and share their views and report out on issues related to this item before you. The process also involves several written public comment periods. Those are shown as green boxes along this timeline. And altogether, we received about 2,000 comment letters during all these various written comment periods. Staff made multiple revisions to the draft order in response to all these written comments. You see here 4 different iterations, and in fact, that makes the 5th as far as the recommendation that you have before you today. Most of those revisions addressed comments predominantly from agricultural interests. Okay, in addition, I'm going to review some background, a little bit of history on the engagement and cooperative efforts between agriculture and various stakeholders and the Water Board prior to adoption of the first conditional waiver in 2004. In the 90s, Water Board staff was implementing the state's non-point source pollution control policy. At that time, that state policy emphasized voluntary efforts and only stepping up to regulatory encouraged efforts or regulatory required actions if it was found that non-point source pollution was contributing to cause water quality problems. So staff was very engaged in supporting and funding voluntary efforts such as education and outreach, capacity building for local groups and coalitions, agricultural water quality research, and demonstration projects. Between 2000 and 2011, the State and Central Coast Water Board funded agricultural water quality projects in the Central Coast region, and we spent or allocated out about $44 million in public grant funds and an additional $12 million in settlement funds or enforcement fees. Also during that same time period, the State Water Resources Control Board made about $600 million available statewide for similar agricultural water quality projects. The types of projects funded in this region included agricultural water quality research, irrigation and nutrient management practice demonstrations, as well as actual implementation, erosion control demonstrations and implementation, and wetland and other treatment systems, monitoring, and habitat restoration. Also during the 90s, the Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program was gearing up and started collecting water quality data along with other local agencies and citizens monitoring groups. The results of this monitoring data informed or was used to identify water bodies to add to the Clean Water Act Section 303D list of impaired waters. In the Central Coast region, the results of that evaluation included adding many impaired waters throughout the region for several different pollutants. In 2002, the majority of the listings for the Central Coast region were and remain to this day for sediment, nutrients, and pesticides or toxicity in agricultural areas. In 2004, the State Water Resources Control Board adopted the policy for implementation and enforcement of the Nonpoint Source Pollution Control Program. That policy required the regional boards to regulate all nonpoint sources of pollution and to use permitting authorities to do that. The policy further required nonpoint source pollution dischargers to do several things. Dischargers must comply with permits or waivers as individuals and may comply with these permits or waivers via a program of a third-party coalition. Any program of a third-party coalition must meet five key elements and be approved by the Water Board. The key elements include the following: pollution control that achieves and maintains water quality objectives, management practice implementation and verification, time schedules and quantifiable milestones. And on time schedules and milestones, the policy explicitly states that those are to apply when it's acknowledged that it will take time to meet water quality objectives. Key element four is feedback mechanisms so that the regional board, dischargers, and the public can determine if the actions taken are achieving their stated goals or if different actions need to be required or adjusted. And finally, consequences for failure to achieve objectives. The boards are responsible for identifying those and making it clear that individual dischargers must take all necessary actions to meet water quality objectives. The policy was adopted in 2004, which was 20 years after hundreds of millions of dollars were granted from public funds for various cooperative efforts and water quality improvement efforts between agriculture, government agencies, and other stakeholders. In 2004, the policy was also adopted in response to increasing evidence of water quality problems. This is even before we had all the monitoring data that we have today that indicates severe and widespread surface and groundwater quality problems from agricultural discharges. The policy was developed and adopted at the same time and in parallel with the 2004 conditional waiver that currently applies to irrigated agricultural lands in our region. And the policy fundamentally shifted the state's emphasis from voluntary approaches that focused more on public funding and providing technical assistance, education, and outreach to instead requiring regulated approaches. As described in the policy specifically, those regulated approaches establish clear requirements for dischargers to implement and verify their practices, meet water quality objectives, monitor and report, and be accountable by adapting their practices or incur enforcement if water quality requirements are not met. The state non-point source policy adopted in 2004 continues to support and encourage implementation of programs by third-party groups or coalitions as long as those third-party groups' programs meet the terms of the policy. With that frame of reference, we support Farmers for Water Quality efforts to use a third-party coalition, as this has been recognized as a valuable structure for controlling non-point source pollution to meet permitted requirements. The draft order that's proposed encourages and allows for such coalitions. An example is the existing Central Coast Vineyard Team's Sustainable in Practice certification. However, as we've reported to you many times and in all of our staff reports, we continue to find that the ag proposal is legally inadequate and unenforceable because it's not crafted as required by the non-point source policy or consistent with the water code. From our perspective, the main flaw with the proposal is the proposed reporting elements. These are the annual report elements that have been presented to us in their proposal. Names of participants, operations audited, watersheds where audits will be conducted, aggregated summary of audit results, summary of third-party assistance, and summary of education workshops. We find these insufficient given the severity of water quality conditions, legally inadequate, and lacking in accountability. These reporting elements don't require measurement or reporting of any indicators by dischargers that demonstrate effectiveness of management practices to control waste discharges, nor pollution reduction within the 5-year term of the order. And most of the reporting elements describe activities by the third-party group and not activities or progress by the actual dischargers. Monitoring and reporting of discharger effectiveness and pollution reduction are necessary and required by the Water Code and the non-point source policy. This slide shows the proposed annual reporting requirements for the staff draft order compared to the ag proposal. And again, I use this to show you that the reporting elements in the ag proposal lack meaningful or accountable short-term measures of progress because they do not include nitrate loading indicators, pollution reduction indicators, practice effectiveness indicators, or any individual discharge monitoring. In addition to the comments and alternative proposals from agriculture, we also received many other comments and a lot of input on the order. Environmental organizations and environmental justice organizations have generally been in support of the order and critical that the order does not adequately protect water quality. Environmental organizations also submitted an alternative proposal, and that proposal was essentially the February 2010 staff draft order with some additional requirements as shown listed here. We also engage with many other government regulatory and resource management agencies, and we specifically receive letters or comments of support on drafts of the order from staff of Monterey Regional Stormwater Management Program, both the regional and state offices of the California Department of Public Health, California Department of Fish and Game, State Parks Department, State Coastal Commission, National Marine Fisheries Service, Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Sam Ziegler, the manager of the Watersheds Office of U.S. EPA Region 9 Water Division, sent this comment: "I've reviewed the order and find it to be an excellent program that I hope gets approved. My support for the program is based largely on its consistency with the U.S. EPA-approved California Nonpoint Source Program that calls for the appropriate use of California's regulatory authorities to foster more extensive implementation. The program as proposed serves as an excellent example of using state authorities to address water quality impairments and focus on protecting public health. Furthermore, the program appears to be based on extensive data and documentation, is extremely well developed and presented, and can serve as a national model to address agricultural dischargers. particularly those causing water quality impairments and a threat to public health. Cindy Forbes, chief of the Southern California Field Operations Branch, sent this comment. The Department of Public Health supports the requirements outlined in the draft agricultural order and encourages the adoption of the order by your board. Protection against continued nitrate contamination of the groundwater in the Central Coast region will minimize the need for additional treatment of public water supply sources from this contaminant, which poses a significant public health threat. We incorporated most of the comments received through the various edits we made to the draft order that is before you today, or we have provided defensible rationale for maintaining the conditions as written to adequately control waste discharges from irrigated agricultural operations and to improve water quality. That concludes my comments, and now Matthew Keeling will speak about the groundwater quality conditions.